So as I said, we're going to be in Hebrews chapter 5. We're going through the book of Hebrews in the sermon series, and it's been a fun ride. It's been deep theological stuff, heavy stuff, some of it. So this week, I decided just to concentrate on the first 10 verses of that chapter because there's just so much in here. And so we're going to look at that. Before I actually get into the scripture, which you can turn to if you'd like, I want to talk about this guy. In 1992, before some of you were born, I was born by then, this man, George McFarland, he was on trial for murder and robbery of a man, and he was about to be sentenced to death. Before the trial, and this is a true story, okay? This is all true. Before the trial, the judge realized that there might be a problem because the defense attorney that George was able to afford to represent him in court was at the jury selection, and he was falling asleep during the jury selection. And the judge saw this, and he was like, that could be a problem, so I'm going to appoint to you a co-counsel. So that's what happens in our systems. You know, you're appointed a good representation, or you're supposed to be anyhow. Well, this co-counsel, the only problem with that is the co-counsel that was appointed to this man had absolutely zero experience in capital cases, in cases where people might be sentenced to death. So George McFarland, he had two lawyers, you know, a co-counsel and the lawyer he hired, and while the trial was going on, his lawyer continued to fall asleep. Again, true story. This is a true story. Continued to fall asleep, and his co-counsel tried to defend him as best he could under the circumstances. Well, George McFarland maintains to this day, to this very day, that he is innocent. He's still on death row. And the two attorneys, actually, they were interviewed, and they spent a total of about 10 hours before the trial preparing for the case. I don't know about you, but that is pretty dismal for a capital murder or a capital case. Put yourself in George McFarland's shoes for a minute, claiming you're innocent, having tried to hire a lawyer who keeps falling asleep on you, and your co-counsel who doesn't really know what they're doing. How would that make you feel? Would you feel good about that or not? Just so you know, this happens actually a lot more than we realize. If any of you have any experience in the court world, I found this article that was written in the Yale Law Journal, believe it or not. Yeah, I don't usually read that, but I did for this thing. And this is titled Counsel for the Poor. This was published in 1994. And it's by Stephen Bright, and he says this. He says, many observers from a variety of perspectives and from different states have found scandalous quality of legal representation. These assessments are supported by numerous cases in which the poor, George McFarland in this case, were defended by lawyers who lacked even the most rudimentary knowledge, resources, and capabilities needed for the defense of a capital case. Death sentences have been imposed in cases in which defense lawyers had not even read the state's death penalty statute. State trial judges and prosecutors have allowed capital trials to proceed and death sentences to be imposed, even when the defense counsel fought amongst themselves, even when the defense counsel referred to their clients by racial slurs, and even when the defense counsel slept through part of the trial, as was the case with this man. And even when defense counsel was intoxicated during the trial. If you were on trial with the potential for being put to death, who would you like to represent you? Today, as we get to look at chapter 5 in Hebrews, we get a look at Jesus as high priest. We get to look at who put him there and how he got there. And we saw from the last time we were talking in Hebrews, Keegan did the message, and he was in chapter 4, and it names Jesus as our high priest. And so in the first four verses of chapter 5, that's what we're going to look at first, we're going to see kind of this function, the function of the high priest, and what that looked like for Israel in their time. So let's actually just go right into that, because let's give you an idea here. For every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God. I'm just going to stop right there. That's your basic definition for what a high priest is. They act on behalf of you in your relationship to God. A lot like a lawyer who acts on your behalf to a judge. And that's why I was bringing that that instance out that I had referred to, that example that I used. Okay? So Jesus acts on our behalf in our relationship to God to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. So we know that in Israel, they had a way of worship that they would bring these offerings and sacrifices so that they could have a right relationship with God, and the priest would administer that. And the high priest was, they would go once a year into the Holy of Holies, and they would present the atonement sacrifice. He can deal gently with the ignorant and wayward, since he himself is beset with weakness. Again, this is pointing towards the high priest in Israel's time. Because of this, he is obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sins, just as he does for those of the people. And no one takes this honor for himself, but only when called by God, just as Aaron was. So here we see that the high priest, they were a person, just like you and I. And so they would go and they would offer first the sacrifice for themselves and then for the people. Now we see that this passage is referring to the high priest, and it's making a correlation to Jesus as our high priest, okay? So we can see the correlations. He can deal gently with the ignorant. We know that Jesus is sympathetic to us because he is one of us. He was human. He came to earth, right? As a human, he took on flesh, we say. God took on flesh through Jesus, and he knows what it's like to be a human. He wasn't beset with sin. We know he was sinless, but he understands our situation. He has our best interest in mind. He is currently sitting by the Father's side representing us. He has our best interest in mind. Unlike the lawyer I talked about, right? The one sleeping and the one that didn't know what he's doing and that kind of thing. He knows what he's doing. We can have confidence in that. So it goes on and says, no one takes the honor for himself, but only when called by God, just as Aaron was. Now, Aaron was the first high priest. After Israel came out of Egypt, they instituted the priestly order, and Aaron was the first high priest. And how the priest was selected by Israel, that kind of changed over time. But here, the author is saying, no one takes this honor for himself. It's not something you could strong arm yourself into. It was a position that was given by God. It was a position that was given by God. So Jesus acts as our high priest. It was his position that was given by God, and he perfectly relates to us. And so we have this wonderful representative before God. Verse 5 and 6 are references to the Psalms, backing up this claim that that Jesus was instituted by God as the high priest. It says, so also Christ did not exalt himself to be made high priest, but was appointed by him who said to him, you are my son, today I have begotten you. As he says also in another place, you are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. You're going to see the word Melchizedek up there a couple times. We're not actually going to concentrate on that this week. That'll be another week. So just so you know. But these are references in the Psalms to Jesus, saying Jesus is the fulfillment of these Psalms. And it's pointing to the fact that God has instituted, or God has put Jesus in that position. Then verse 7, in the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverence. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered, and being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him, being designated by God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. God is the one who gives the calling. I like to say it this way. God is, because sometimes we get a little confused with calling. Well, what's my calling and that kind of thing? God is the one who gives us our responsibilities, maybe I can say. Jesus was given the responsibility of high priest and the functions thereof. He was the one who was given that honor. And it was given to him by God. And so the question, one of the questions I have for you this morning is, what positions of responsibility or authority are you in? What calling has God, does God have on your life? It's really important, I think, to remember that it's God who has you there. It's God who has you there for a purpose. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, it is important to remember that God has a greater purpose for you in that responsibility, so to speak. Whether that's your job, whether that's your in your family, or here at church, in a church function in some sort. But we struggle with that calling sometimes, I think. It's hard for us sometimes to know exactly maybe how to see that bigger purpose and how to endure, especially when you're when it's hard, right? When things get tough. I have a little story. This is a photo. This is a family photo of mine when I was little. I was 1 year old in here. This is back in 88, all right? 1988. This is in a house down in Wrightsville. Actually, the house is no longer there, but this was when we lived in Wrightsville in York County. And I have this picture up here because what you might not know is that in this photo, this is when I would say my parents were just starting to, it was still really tough, but they were getting a little bit further along because they had just gone through like the worst financial crisis of their lives in a sense, like a few years earlier. And I came along making it a lot worse, financially speaking. It's true. But we're all smiling and we're all together there. I love that. I just love that. I didn't know any different. I didn't know we were not doing too well financially. But I remember talking to my father years ago now, when we were working in the garden. That's where I talked to my dad a lot. And I remember talking to my father, and he was talking about some of those financially hard times, the tough times, right, that him and my mother had gone through. And you see, they had to sell the farm. For my dad, he knew from a young age that he wanted to farm. You guys know what that's like. Many of you are farmers. Having to deal with the devastating loss, feeling like you're called by God to farm, he was forced to reckon with the fact that his calling to farm would look a lot different than what he had hoped for. After all, this conversation I had with him, we were gardening. I remember him saying very clearly that the financial strain that he and my mother went through, that most couples don't survive. And what I didn't exactly realize at the time, but I feel like I'm getting more of a glimpse of today, or I'm understanding a little more, is just the immense suffering that my dad had undergone. The deep depression, the identity issues. And yet, he gave my mother honor through this. Because of the way he talked about it. He didn't sugarcoat it. Yeah, it was tough. There were people that, you know, you kind of want to blame certain people. There are different people who have different responsibilities that way. And yet, he knew that ultimately, he had to give honor and respect and love to kind of a, maybe you could call it a superior calling, a superior responsibility, his priorities, a bigger calling that God had called him to. And that responsibility was his marriage and his love for his wife. Didn't look the same. His calling didn't look the same as he thought. And yet, we were together. Suffering in the midst of your calling. My father knew what his responsibilities were and what his priorities were. God has a greater purpose for you in whatever responsibilities you have. When my dad, eventually he did a lot of odd jobs, and eventually he started doing heating and air conditioning and stuff, and he got to be part of God's purpose, greater purpose in that. And he realized that later, I think. He got into a lot of homes, was able to be a good influence on a lot of people. We ended up moving up here, up north. And I'm so thankful that he remained faithful to his calling, to, first of all, his wife, and then to the other callings that he had in his life. And God has a greater purpose for you in whatever calling you find yourself in, whatever responsibilities you have right now. Don't think about your past. Don't think about where you want to be in the future. Think about right now, where you are at, what relationships you have, what job you have. What is God doing in that? Ask yourself those questions. Jesus is in the position of high priest. God had called him into that position, and Jesus suffered in obedience to God. And I am so glad that Jesus did that, because now I have a perfect representative who understands me, who sympathizes with me, who sympathizes with us in our humanity, and he is the perfect high priest. He was made perfect for us, and he is established by God himself, and he represents me and you in heaven to God. And I'm so thankful, because he didn't even want me to pay for it. He paid for it himself. He's the perfect lawyer in that sense. He has our best interest in mind. Jesus gave his life. He suffered in obedience in order so that he could fulfill his high priestly role. Jesus is the best representative we could ask for. And he has gone before us and acts on our behalf. And this is something I'm so thankful for. And so Jesus was obedient to his calling. Jesus was obedient to the responsibilities that God had given him. And I like to refer that to my dad. My dad was responsible in that way, and he was obedient to God in the hard times, and I benefit from that. And I'm so thankful that he did that as well. And so, again, what positions are you in? What authority do you have? What job do you have? What relationship are you in? What needs to be your priority relationship, and how is God working in that? Do you see the greater purpose for what God has for you? And you have to seek that. You have to ask God, what is your purpose in my life while I'm in this position? When we submit to Jesus as our high priest, he is then our perfect representation. He's our perfect lawyer. He is the one who represents us in our relationship to God. It is through Jesus that we have relationship with God. And if you haven't done that, I ask that you would. He's not going to fall asleep on you. All right? What does Scripture say? We all fall short of the glory of God. We all have sinned. We all are like George McFarlane on death row in a way. Who do you want to represent you to God? You want to try it yourself? I know I can't do that. Allow Jesus to represent you. Allow Jesus to go before you. He already has. He's already paid the price. He's already sacrificed himself for you. Come under his high priestly-ship, if you want to say that. Allow him to be your high priest. Recognize that he is your high priest and that he suffered for you. He came to earth. He walked the earth. He died on the cross for your sins. He rose from the grave, defeating death, just like we sang this morning. Beautifully. Wonderful. Don't forget what Jesus has done for you, that he had suffered in obedience to be the high priest, your high priest.